Chapter 4. After dinner, Higgins drove us to our hotel, located at the hub of Center City, the industrial complex. With the exception of visiting company officials and newly arrived workers not yet assigned to housing, it didn't seem much business. We stayed there only long enough to unpack. We had one bag apiece, each containing a plasma pistol and a small lightweight plastic semi-auto chambered for stunners and the small jet power fragmentation rounds. The polymer holster rigs, spare magazines, and disposable charge packs left barely enough room for a change of clothes.
"Looks like you take your game pretty seriously," said Higgins.
"Some games are much more serious than others," Breck said.
He slipped the heavy plasma pistol into his shoulder rig, snugged the semi-auto into the cross-draw holster on his belt, then put on an elegant, three-quarter-length black coat, fashionably cut and tailored loosely to conceal the bulges.
"And I, for one, don't like to lose," he added.
Who's the plant foreman accused of the sabotage?" I asked.
"Gil Kavanaugh."
I glanced at Breck. I think we should see him first."
"I agree," said Breck. "And then, Mr. Higgins, perhaps you'd be kind enough to show us some of the local nightlife, such as it is."
"I was hoping to get an early start in the morning,"
Higgins said.
"Tyla has agreed to take us out to her tribe and..."
"It's early yet," said Breck. "I'd like to get a feeling for the mood of the workers here in light of what's occurred. Ask your wife if she'll accompany us."
Higgins shook his head.
"I don't think that would be a very good idea. I haven't exactly endeared myself to the people here. My relationship with Tyla has only made things worse. I'll show you around if you like, but it wouldn't be smart to bring Tyla along. It would be inviting trouble."
"Trouble is precisely what I wish to invite," Breck said. "If there are any ambermorphs among the workers here, I not only want them to know we're here, I want them to know we're going out to contact the natives tomorrow. If you look after your wife, don't worry. She'll be perfectly safe with us."
"It's not my wife I'm worried about,"
said Higgins. Breck raised his eyebrows. Higgins shrugged.
"All right. I'll take you over to see Kavanaugh, and then I'll drop you off at what we call the Red Zone. I'll go get Tyla and meet you at a bar called Cody's Place. It isn't hard to find. Just ask anyone."
Gil Kavanaugh was a very angry man. He was also a very big man with a face like a russet potato, wide and ruddy, the sort of face on which every thought and emotion were plainly written. I didn't think it looked like the face of a saboteur.
"I'm not gonna let him pin this on me, the bastards,"
he shouted, slamming his hand down on the table.
"I told him, put me on the goddamn machines, give me the test, and see if I'm lying."
"Settle down, Kavanaugh."
A tinny voice came from a speaker mounted below the single high window. The room was bare save for a table and four chairs. We sat on one side of the table, Kavanaugh sat on the other. There was nothing separating us, but Kavanaugh was wearing magna cuffs, which could be activated at a moment's notice.
"You keep your mouth shut, Evans! I'm talking to these people!"
Kavanaugh thundered, pointing a meaty finger up at the guard's window.
"Just settle down, all right, Gil,"
said Evans, wearily.
"All right, all right."
He scowled up at the window, then continued at a slightly lower volume.
"Anyway, I took the test and I passed the goddamn thing. I wasn't lying, see? But that's not enough for him, the sons of bitches. They figure I came up with some way to beat the damn machine. Me, a simple working stiff. What do I know about crap like that? I'm no cybernetics engineer. Listen, I tell him, what the hell you think I did? Planted the explosives, then beamed myself with a goddamn wrench and tied myself up while I was unconscious? Feel the size of the lump there. Damn near split my head open. So you know what they came back with? 'We know you didn't pull this off alone,' they said. 'You've got an accomplice. Tell us who it is and we'll go easy on you.' They said, 'Confess,' they said. 'Confess! Confess my ass! Confess to what? I didn't do a goddamn thing!'"
"Kavanaugh, I'm warning you."
Evans' voice came through the speaker overhead.
"Fuck you, Evans!"
Kavanaugh hollered, leaping to his feet and sending his chair crashing to the floor. He pointed up at the window.
"Corporate security, my ass! You're just a cheap, imported armbreaker, you union-busted son of a—"
The guard activated the magnacuffs, and Kavanaugh's braceleted wrists suddenly snapped together with a hard click. He doubled over sharply as the cuff slammed against the metal magna plate in the belt around his waist.
"Ah! Evans, you weaselly little runt!"
His muscles bunched as he strained against the cuffs.
You wait till I get out of here! I'll rip your goddamned head off!
Release him, please, Mr. Evans,
Breck said.
I don't think that would be a very good idea, Mr. Breck.
Evans' voice came through the speaker. You got him all excited. The state he's in right now, I couldn't answer for.
Release him, please!
The cuffs were turned off and Kavanaugh straightened up, glowering at the guard behind the window. He glanced at Breck and muttered,
Thanks.
Please sit down, Mr. Kavanaugh, Breck said. There's no need for these histrionics. They're inclined to believe you.
Yeah?
He glanced at Breck uncertainly.
Yeah, we have good reason to think you're probably telling the truth. However, we cannot help you at the moment. To do that, we would have to prove that you did not sabotage the plant, and that would be difficult, as there are numerous witnesses who saw you.
I don't care how many witnesses say they saw me. I didn't do it.
What do you think happened, Gil? I said.
How the hell should I know? I'm being set up. That's all I can tell you. If people are saying they saw me do it, then they've been paid off. Wouldn't surprise me one bit. Between that damn tree hugger trying to shut us down and the company trying to keep us from starting up a union, that's the only explanation I can think of.
Well, I can think of another possible explanation, Breck said. Tell me, did you happen to notice anything unusual before you were struck unconscious? Anything at all?
Kavanaugh frowned and shook his head.
Nah, nothing special. Why?
Was there any new people on your shift?
Kavanaugh shook his head again.
Nah, it was the same crew I've been working with for months.
Was anyone not where they were supposed to be? I said. Kavanaugh shook his head.
Nah, not that I know of. Why? What are you getting at?
Be attempting to find out if any of your co-workers were in a position to assault you,
Breck said.
There wasn't anybody near me I could see,
said Kavanaugh.
You think if I saw someone coming at me with that wrench, they'd have knocked me out? The bastard snuck up on me. Believe me, I wish there was something I could tell you, but if I didn't see anything, I didn't see anything. One minute I was just doing my job, and the next I was out on the floor.
Can you think of anyone who might have wanted to do you an injury?
Breck said.
Someone you had quarreled with, not necessarily related to your efforts with forming a union. Something personal, perhaps.
Hey, on a job like this, you have your arguments, you have your fights. You go after work and have a few. Somebody mouth off, and you dance around a little. It's no big deal. It happens all the time. You don't go hanging something like this on anyone like that.
So what you're telling us, Mr. Kavanaugh, is that you really can't help us prove you're innocent, I said.
I don't have to prove I'm innocent, for God's sakes. I didn't do it. They have to prove I'm guilty, don't they?
They've apparently got a hell of a case, I said. Your own friends have testified against you.
Yeah, that's what they tell me,
Kavanaugh muttered morosely.
I don't understand it. Someone must have got to him somehow, threatened him, paid him off. I don't know. What can I say?
He pointed to Breck, anxiously.
You said you had another explanation for all this?
Impossible explanation, said Breck. But it would be very difficult to prove. We'd have to prove that your fellow workers saw it's not you, but someone or something who looked exactly like you. A creature capable of assuming your appearance, of reading your mind to knowing exactly where to find the explosive charges and how to place them for optimum results. In other words, Mr. Kavanaugh, a draconian ambermorph, a shape changer.
Kavanaugh's jaw dropped.
That's impossible,
he said.
That would mean they broke the quarantine.
His eyes narrowed.
Wait a minute. This is all part of your new game of yours. Is that what this is all about? Is that why you're taking an interest in my case, isn't it? You're trying to use me in your goddamn game!
He started to get to his feet.
Sit down, Breck said firmly. Even if we were only helping you to add realism to our game, what difference would it make? You need all the help you can get. And from where I sit, it doesn't look good if you're getting any. Right now, we are all you've got. As to whether this is not a game, judge for yourself. Your own friends saw you order everyone out of the plant. Perhaps some of them could have been paid to frame you. It's certainly possible, but all of them? I don't know these people, but you too. You've worked with them. What do you think?
You saying this is for real?
You tell me,
Breck said.
But in order to convince your accusers, they'll need to prove two things to our own satisfaction first. We'll be leaving first thing in the morning to investigate reports of what could be ambermorphs among the nomad tribes. We've heard enough to make us think they are, but we need proof.
You said you need to prove two things to get me off,
said Kavanaugh.
So what's the second?
That could be even more difficult,
said Breck.
We'd have to prove that you are really human.
Were you serious in there?
Higgins had watched and listened with Evans in the guard room.
You actually suspect that Kavanaugh may not be human?
I allowed that suspicion to enter my mind, yeah,
said Breck.
That way, in the event that Kavanaugh isn't really Kavanaugh, he now knows that we suspect him of being an ambermorph. And now that he knows our plans, it may force his hand. Unless, of course, he's really what he seems to be. In which case, we'll have to try and flush out our quarry elsewhere.
So then it wasn't just a ploy. You really do suspect him?
I suspect everyone, Higgins,
Breck said. He turned to him and smiled.
Even you.
Well, that's certainly reassuring.
Don't sound so affronted. It's nothing personal,
said Breck.
You realize, of course, that Evans heard everything you said. That was intentional, wasn't it? You wanted to get around. You're setting yourselves up as targets. And that means I'll be a target too, because I'm with you.
We are all targets, Higgins,
Breck said.
That is the nature of the game. Anyone can be a victim.
So everyone should be suspected?
Higgins said, shaking his head.
I couldn't live like that. I'd become a raving paranoid.
Paranoia has its uses,
Breck said.
A useful psychoanalysis,
Higgins said, wryly.
There's a new idea.
In an insane world, sanity has its drawbacks,
Breck said with an ironic smile. Higgins didn't seem to find Breck's remark amusing. For that matter, neither did I, largely because it was the sort of black humor that was derived from truth. Gallows humor, as it was sometimes called. We were all going to swing together, so we might as well have a good last laugh. Real psychos, as opposed to the entertainment kind, were all too often merely people who couldn't handle the psychosis of society. They caved into the pressure and became buried in their own delusions, which were different from those of society only in degree. Sanity was relative. It all came down to how much you could handle. Survival of the fittest translated into how much madness could you take. It was all a matter of conditioning, something Coles was an expert in. He was a product of the system, a system that insidiously conditioned us all through the news and entertainment media to gradually accept greater and greater levels of abnormality as being normal. More violence, more death, more decadence, more editing of our reality by those we placed in charge of us. It was a chain reaction, out of control and growing exponentially. Like grading on a curve, the scale of sanity kept moving farther and farther into the red zone of psychosis. But since we were all taking that trip together, nobody really noticed. The ones who broke down, we labeled mad because they couldn't take our level of insanity, which became sanity by virtue of being shared by the majority. I empathized with those who didn't want to play the game. Who was to say they weren't the sane ones, the ones who saw what we were doing to ourselves and opted out in the only way they could? Part of our audience was going to believe that all of this was real. Part would think it was a game, only a harmless psycho-cybernetic entertainment. And part wouldn't have known the difference either way, perhaps because they had stopped caring. It was that last segment of the audience Coles was trying to expand, because they were the ones whose realities would be the easiest to manipulate, who would be the easiest to control. Was there a worse sin in the modern world than to be useless? No, it was far better to be used. Much like Kavanaugh, who was being used by both sides, and much like me. After all, I was to some extent a product of their fantasies. I couldn't tell what was real and what wasn't anymore, so it all became reality to me. It made me wonder, was that insanity or merely self-defense? The red zone reminded me a little of the Ginza Strip, only on a far smaller, more compartmentalized scale. Like the workers' residential villages, it was laid out in a tri-level mall on the west side of the industrial hub known as Center City. Only here, there was no effort made to create a balanced living environment, as the planners like to put it. The red zone was definitely unbalanced. The atmosphere was raucous. Flashing lights and blasting music competed with the amplified shouting of the pitchmen as they tried to snag passerby into their saloons. Feral-looking hookers cruised the mall, cyberpunk to the core, charging all the trade could bear, which was considerable, thinking to score big and return to whatever urban warren they had come out from. They'd probably wind up just as lost in that dream here as they would have been at home. Few of them would ever make it out again. Company town morality ruled in the red zone. Enterprising business people came in and, for a small licensing fee paid to the consortium, a rental and utility agreement, and a percentage of the gross, they opened up establishments to service the workers, in much the same way that stallions serviced mares. The consortium paid its employees generous wages to offset the hardships of working on Purgatory. The Red Zone furnished entertainment and the means for the consortium to recover some of those generous wages. The consortium could afford to pay the workers well, partly because, one way or another, much of that money went right back into the company coffers. As Higgins had promised, we found Cody's place without any trouble. It was located at the far end of the mall, on the third level. Cody's place was a bit different from most of the other funplexes on the mall. For one thing, it didn't have a flashing sign or speakers blaring music or a pitchman or any kind of video display. There were no nymphettes comforting in the windows. In fact, there were no windows. There was just a black wall with the words, Cody's Place, painted on in large gilt letters. The door was an unpretentious metal slab, and there was a glassed-in notice posted on the outside that read, No hustlers, no hookers, no credit. Patrons will be held responsible for breakage.
I suspect this place has what they call character, said Breck.
We opened the door and went inside. The bar was immediately to our left, and it ran the length of the entire establishment. You could have held races on it. If it came in a bottle and was alcoholic, it looked like Cody's had it. There were several bartenders, both male and female, and they were all being kept busy by a mixed crowd of laborers just off shift. It wasn't a gaming establishment, but there were a number of friendly card games going on at several of the tables. I stifled my natural urges and swore that I would merely observe. A hollow juke was playing a plaintive ballad as the life-size three-dimensional images of the singer and her backup band were projected on the stage. Some men and women were gathered around several arcade games in the center, one of which featured a realistic-looking robot cowboy that urged you to
slap leather, hombre.
If it beat you to the draw, you caught a sonic pulse from its gun that was like being struck hard in the chest with someone's fist. Whereupon the robot grinned, spat a stream of ersatz tobacco juice into a brass spittoon, and said,
Eat dirt, greenhorn.
If you beat the robot, it went flying backwards, struck against a wall, slid down to the floor, and said,
You got me, Doc.
Then it picked itself back up again and to urge the next player to
slap leather, hombre.
Yeah, said Breck. Character.
Help you, gentlemen,
said the pretty blonde behind the bar.
Irish whiskey, I said.
Your best Doc ale, said Breck.
Coming right up.
She brought the drinks.
You fellas aren't new, are you?
Actually, we're only visiting, I said.
Visiting? You're kidding. Who visits Purgatory? I've been here 6 months now, and it feels like 6 years.
I know the feeling, I said.
I felt like telling her that if she thought it was bad now, she should have seen it before the construction of the tubeways and the malls, before there was anything like the Red Zone or a planned living community, when there was only a small military base with a despondent drunk for a commander, a couple of isolated industrial plants, and a cluster of modular workers' housing tacked onto the soldiers' barracks. And beyond that, miles and miles of nothing. There were still miles and miles of nothing, only now the steel islands of human industries were much larger, and the air around them was much dirtier, though the inhabitants were well protected within their closed environments. She glanced from Breck to me with a slight frown.
I swear, you guys look sort of familiar. Wait a minute. I know you.
Here it comes, I thought. Breck's swashbuckling charm strikes again.
Aren't you Arkady O'Toole? The Psycho Star!
Breck grinned and raised his glass to me.
Yes, I am,
I said, astonished at being singled out over Breck.
And you're Rudy Breck, aren't you?
She said, glancing from me to him and back again.
I can't believe it!
She grabbed my hand in both of hers.
Can I have your autograph? What are you doing here? Wait a minute. You're staging one of your adventure games, aren't you? Of course. Why else would you be here? I can't believe it. Are we on right now?
Well, actually, we are.
Oh my God. Hey, people, listen up. You'll never believe this. We're on Psychodrome.
We immediately became the center of attention. People crowded around us, shaking our hands, asking for autographs, wanting to buy us drinks. It took a while to get the whole thing sorted out. We wound up sitting on the bar so everyone could see us, surrounded by the patrons and answering their questions. A lot of them were familiar with the alien invasion game that the company had been promoting. Coles, never one to waste an opportunity, had broadcast some of my Hallucinac training sessions as coming attractions. They wanted to know if we were going to stage an invasion scenario on Purgatory.
Here to hunt some shape changes,
one big guy said, with a wink.
Hey, Rudy,
said another bruiser, as if he'd known Breck all his life.
What do these ambermorphs look like?
They could look like anyone, or anything, said Breck. We heard there may have been some sightings amongst the native tribes. We're leaving in the morning to check out those reports.
Hell, if they start with those screwy ceremonies of theirs, they're liable to see anything,
someone else said, to accompanying laughter. We could have sat there, like a couple of boys who had cried wolf, insisting that it wasn't just a game, that it was real, that the shape changers of Draconis had actually broken the quarantine and could even be standing amongst us at that very moment. And they would have laughed and played along with it in the spirit of the game, figuring we had to play as if it were for real. The fact that it was for real didn't seem to matter. If a squad of ambomorphs had walked into that bar, shape-changed in front of everyone, and slaughtered half of the people there, the surviving witnesses would probably never have believed, so strong was the momentum of the alternate reality Coles had created. Common sense seemed to indicate that it had to break down somewhere. The lie would have to become too cumbersome, and the truth would have to come out eventually. Only, I didn't think Coles cared about that very much. Like most bureaucrats, he'd deal with the truth only if and when he had to. Meanwhile, he would manufacture lies and stall. Power brokers always played for time, because time could purchase power, which could buy more time, and so on. The trouble was, time was not an unlimited commodity. Sooner or later, it ran out. The crowd kept getting bigger as word of our arrival spread, and Cody himself appeared to take charge of the situation. The owner of Cody's place was a dark, wiry, sharp-featured man named Cody Jarrett, a 5-foot bundle of cocky energy who spoke in sharp, staccato bursts and easily dominated the room full of roughnecks, despite being fully half their size.
"We missed you guys at the hotel,"
said Jarrett.
"When we heard you'd arrived, a bunch of us went down to give you a proper welcome, but you never showed."
"Sorry, we had dinner with a friend," I said.
"Oh, you mean some inconsiderate shit wined and dined you while we all cooled our heels waiting? Whom do we have to thank for all this?"
"I'm a gentleman named Grover Higgins," Breck said.
Our audience stopped smiling.
"You should be more careful about who you call your friends,"
said a huge barrel-chested man with a shaved head.
"Out here, a man's judged by the company he keeps."
"That's enough, Strang,"
said Jarrett. He turned to us with an apologetic shrug.
"Your friend, Higgins, hasn't exactly gone out of his way to get along with people here."
"He mentions something about that," Breck said. "The way he tells it, it seems as if he's only doing his job."
"There are different ways to get a job done,"
said Strang.
"I only know two,"
Higgins said.
"A right way
and wrong way.
He stood outside the circle with Tyla by his side. People made way for them, some staring at Tyla with more than just surprise at seeing a nomad female in their midst. She stared back at them with equal frankness, imperious challenge in her golden eyes.
If you're going to mouth off about me, Strang,
Higgins said, coming to within about a foot of him,
why don't you do it to my face?
Come now, that's enough, boys.
Jarrett tried to intervene by standing between them. The gesture lacked something. He only came up to Higgins' chin, and Strang looked over him without any trouble whatsoever. I wasn't even sure he saw him.
What are you gonna do? Write me up in one of your reports?
Strang said with a sneer.
My job is to make sure the operations here are in compliance,
Higgins said evenly.
If they're not, I have to report it. You've got your job, Strang, and I've got mine.
Bull,
said Strang.
You just want to shut us down so you and your scientist friends can have this piece of rock all to yourselves.
Come on, boys, simmer down,
said Jarrett.
Sit down and have a drink.
Why don't you tell the truth?
Said Strang, ignoring Jarrett.
You don't really give a damn about compliance. You're glad that cracking tower blew. I wouldn't be surprised if you even had a hand in it. You've been out to shut us down ever since the day you got here.
That isn't true,
Higgins protested.
You know I...
Guys, look,
said Jarrett, vainly trying to get their attention.
The hell it isn't. It's because of guys like you that working men like us had to bring our families out to some miserable piece of rock like purgatory just to make a living. You shut us down on Earth, and now you even want to close us down out here. And for what? For a bunch of stinking, savage, subhuman.
Higgins reached right over Jarrett and punched Strang in the face. Strang reeled back, recovered quickly, shoved Jarrett aside, and delivered a roundhouse blow to Higgins' jaw. As Higgins went down, Tyla lunged at Strang with a snarl and laid his face open with her claws. Strang howled with pain and rage, seized her, and threw her clear across the room. She flipped in midair and landed crouched on the balls of her feet in the middle of the stage. She looked as if she would have come right back at Strang, only landing in the middle of a holographic projection confused her. The singer strutted across the stage and passed right through her. Tyla leaped backwards, glanced down at herself in shock, and then reached out to touch one of the projections, jerking her hand back when she found that it was insubstantial. By the time she had recovered from her shock, Higgins had plucked a beer bottle off the bar and broken it over Strang's head. One of Strang's buddies took exception to this cavalier christening of his friend and punched Higgins. Jarrett tried to intervene and got his nose bloodied for his trouble. Some friends came to his rescue, and the Donnybrook erupted into a cacophony of yells, grunts, smashing glass, and breaking furniture. For a moment, I had a ringside seat atop the bar, but then I felt myself being pulled over backward, and the next thing I knew, I was flat on my back on the floor behind the bar, with the pretty young blonde bartender crouching over me.
These things can get a little noisy sometimes,
she said, her eyes bright, her voice sultry.
It's much quieter down here.
Her face was inches from mine. She moistened her lips. Suddenly, her features swam and seemed to melt. Her nose became a snout. Her teeth lengthened into feline fangs. Her smooth skin became tawny fur. A deep growl rumbled from her throat as the hands holding down my shoulders turned into huge paws. There was a sudden jarring impact on the creature's back, and the blood-chilling growl became an agonized, high-pitched yelp as five razor-sharp Nysteel blades ripped through its chest, splattering me with blood. The creature wrenched itself off Breck's blades and collapsed beside me, its transformation to feline predator not yet complete. With its last breaths, it changed back to the form of the pretty blonde bartender, her chest and back a bloody ruin, her lips flecked with red foam. She stared at me with utter loathing, then coughed twice, blood bubbling from her throat, and died.
Don't just lie there, O'Toole,
said Breck, leaning over the bar and extending his left hand to me.
Come on!
He pulled me to my feet and, with only one hand, lifted me effortlessly over the bar. The riot was still in progress, and I couldn't even tell which side was which, much less who was winning. Breck pulled me toward the exit, shoving people out of his way as he
plowed through the crowd like a juggernaut. I didn't see Higgins or Tyla anywhere.
Well, where's Higgins?
I shouted as we burst through the door. A number of people passing by recoiled from Breck as he stood there, looking around wildly, blood dripping from the slender blades of his artificial hand.
Zah!
He pointed with his knives, and I saw Higgins in the distance, racing along the mall. We took off after him. I didn't have the slightest idea of what was going on. I kept thinking about how close I'd come to being killed again. Breck had saved my life once more. He easily outdistanced me, running with astonishing speed. He caught up to Higgins and passed him. I sobbed for breath, pumping my arms and legs for all I was worth, dodging around people or knocking them over. I heard the high-pitched whining sound of Breck's semi-auto firing the stunner darts. As I turned the corner into a wide, circular atrium, I saw people running in the opposite direction, screaming and shouting. Breck stood against the railing of the promenade to my left. Three stories down, on the ground level, a fountain spurted up from the center of a wide pool, shooting long plumes of water toward the skylight. Across from Breck, and to my right, Higgins was running around the promenade toward the far side, where Tyla lay sprawled at Strang's feet.
"Stay back, Higgins!"
shouted Breck, leveling his weapon. He fired again just as Strang leaped over the railing. His body became dark and blurry as it fell, as if it had been atomized into thousands of particles, and then it burst apart into a black, buzzing cloud of insects that circled the fountain, heading straight towards Higgins. I drew my plasma pistol and fired. The white-hot charges sizzled through the fountain, sending out clouds of steam, incinerating most of the insects as they flew towards Higgins. The rest, all that remained of the whole thing that had been Strang, rained down like gravel into the pool below. I came up beside Higgins. He was bending over Tyla.
Is she all right?
Higgins nodded as she stirred slightly.
She was just knocked unconscious. She saw Strang run, and she went after him. Only, it wasn't Strang, was it?
He looked over the railing, down at the fountain, and he shook his head.
How the hell do you fight creatures like that?
For the moment, fighting them is the least of our concerns,
said Breck as he came up to us.
Fighting them is not impossible. What I'd like to know is how we're going to capture one.
Capture one?
Said Higgins.
Are you crazy?
Nine. Merely a psycho, Mr. Higgins.
Breck grimaced wryly.
Capturing an ambermorph is what we came to do. So, no one bothered telling us exactly how we were supposed to do it. In any case, we'd best pick up our bags at the hotel and be on our way about it now instead of waiting for the morning. If we remain here, I may be charged with murder.
Murder?
I had to kill that pretty young bartender,
Breck said.
She wasn't human, you see. But I'm afraid that only O'Toole and I could testify to that, since the creature managed to change back to human form before it died.
Jesus! That's unbelievable,
said Higgins.
Precisely,
said Breck.
But if both you and O'Toole testify that she was an ambermorph, and if I testify to what just happened here.
Don't be absurd,
said Breck.
I have no intention of standing trial. Who would listen seriously to our testimony? These psychos don't even know what's real and what isn't. Besides, everyone knows that this is just a game.
End of chapter.